23-1012, which is Vernon Mugley versus Lyding Township. Council, you'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you could please stay on mute when you are not arguing, that'd be helpful. Please state your name for the record, because we will keep an audio recording of the record. And please keep an eye on the clock, which you should see in your screen. And with that, appellant's counsel, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, justices. My name is Blake Labinus, a lawyer out of the Brainerd area representing Vernon Mugley, who I had expected, and he might be running a little bit late here because we were expecting a 10-10 appearance, but this works just fine. And so he may show up at my office to get the recap after this is all completed. In any event, and so, but if another screen pops up from my conference room, that would be him. But if it may please the court, I would begin by saying thank you for granting us this oral argument. This is a situation where we have a private dispute that kind of bubbled over into a public dispute with respect to Lyding Township. Vernon Mugley is the successor in interest of a parcel of land in that township area. And his family has been there since about 1994. It was owned previously by his father, Edward and Lisa, who then conveyed it to his brother, Edward III. It was most recently conveyed to my client, Vernon, in 2021. And I only bring that up for the court's information to kind of establish that this isn't just that even though Vernon is the real party in interest in my client in this respect, this is a family matter, along with Lyding Township tertiary folks that are benefited by the cartway that was granted here for the Brokaws. And so when I refer to the Brokaws and the Mugleys, that's what I'm referring to. The Brokaws are the owners of the southern parcel that is abuts to the southern side of the and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I just got the message that my client has showed up. So this is a little unorthodox, and this would not be happening if I were in person. I apologize for that. But anyway, that abuts the southern border, and they have been neighbors for an awfully long time. No one disputes that. The record is pretty clear that the Brokaws have owned their parcel since the 80s, and the Mugleys have owned since 1994, and they've kind of gotten along that way. And it's also not disputed that the Brokaws have accessed their parcel of land by way of a pathway or an existing roadway or a historic roadway that has been in existence for years and borders.
Can I jump in and ask a question? I don't want you to use all of your time recounting the facts. It's well briefed and the facts are in the record. Mike, I have a question for you about the first argument that appears in your brief, and it showed up in the district court, which is this argument that there's already an established easement crossing the property. You've seen the district court's analysis of that issue and the respondent's brief pointing out that that was an issue that wasn't raised before the town board. Do you agree that that issue was not raised before the town board? And if you do, what would be the legal basis for us to consider it?
Well, Your Honor, I do. Thank you for that question. I do remember that from the court's analysis, and to expand on that, I did make a passing reference to that being outside of the record. My response would be that, and recognizing, of course, that pro se litigants are expected to follow the rules and are expected to follow all the, you know, to preserve issues for appeal, that there has been granted some leeway in other court of appeals opinions. I did cite to a decision that is not exactly on point with respect to a cartway dispute, but it is on point with respect to pro se litigants not fully preserving their issues for appeal, and ask the district court and would ask this court to have granted my clients a little bit of leeway, because it's not as if this was a situation where nothing existed. This is a situation where something actually did exist in reality. And
well, if you really want to go to the merits of it, I mean, the district court was pretty convinced, sort of in the alternative, that there's nothing in the record to prove that that to allow for a finding that there was in fact an easement going across the property. In other words, even the district court said, even if it was getting to the issue, there wasn't a basis to avoid summary judgment. And it seems like that might be the case in the record. What do you point to say that there was certainly this easement going across the property?
Well, we would maintain that there is an established easement that was reserved and that that benefited the Brokaw property that was that then encumbered the Servient estate, which was the Mugley property. But even in the alternative, there's no dispute that there's been access, and that and the, certainly there's been no excuse that access for a number of years, and there's certainly no dispute that that access has been hostile. And so regardless of whether or not there was an easement recorded, there was certainly meaningful access that the Brokaws had been using since the 1980s. And so—
But as a legal matter, that's a separate issue, right? I mean, whether there was whether the statutory basis for not granting the cartway being that there's an easement, you're arguing something different now, it sounds like, which is that, well, they could have, even if there was no easement, they could have accessed some other way. You recognize that's a different legal argument.
Right? I do, Your Honor. And I guess what I'm attempting to do, and maybe not as artfully as I would hope, is to suggest that it's pretty clear that the Cartway petition is not supposed to be used as an alternative to these private disputes. And the Romer decision speaks to that directly. And so the case law does not say that a recorded easement is the only means of relief that my clients would have. There was also what was never established, I will admit to that, as a potential implied easement or prescriptive easement here, but there was meaningful access. And that's where we stand on that, that meaningful access existed, and that the petitioner, or that the Brokaws, rather than go to the township to establish a public cartway and actually take land away from my clients, the Mugleys, had other options available and used something that they were not entitled to use.
So that's the alternative route argument, really, that you're making, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that gets to the arbitrary and capricious, I think, argument that you're making. And when I look at the township's reasoning, it seemed to me that there was evidence and argument and discussion about the fact that the proposed cartway route had been a highway, had been used for many years by a previous owner after the highway was closed, the immediate predecessor of the current occupant living there full time, that it was used by the current occupant until it was roped off by your client. That there's some wetlands concerns, that an alternative route crossing the tracks wouldn't probably be feasible because the railway probably wouldn't grant. Anyway, all of these things were discussed. These seem to be reasons for the township's decision, which isn't that all we're looking for in order to avoid an arbitrary and capricious determination that there was some rationale?
With respect, Your Honor, I guess my response to that would be that there can be reasons, but whether or not those reasons are sufficient is another question entirely. I mean, the wetland concern was brought up by Mr. Brokaw at the hearing.
But isn't that what we're looking to? I mean, it seems like you're arguing whether these are good enough reasons, but in order to avoid a determination, given our deference to the township and the district court's deference to the township, isn't it enough to say that it wasn't arbitrary, that there was reasons that were provided? There may have been other counter arguments and different reasons for a different route, but given the standard of review, am I correct that that's all we're looking to are reasons that are plausible?
With respect, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I believe that when we get into arbitrary and capricious, we still need to have a reason that satisfies that arbitrary and capricious standard. You can pluck any reason out of the sky. And
what's the legal definition then of the, what would you say, and what is the case law to support the proposition that some reasons are not sufficient, that there has to be, these have to be the best reasons?
Well, I'm certainly not arguing that they need to be the absolute best reasons, but I do. But my client argued, and we briefed, in discussing what arbitrary and capricious means, that the reasons given by the township were not based on sufficient findings. Having a self-serving statement from the Brokaws about a wetland concern, based on my understanding of what arbitrary and capricious means, does not support a finding that an alternative route would have been less reasonable.
Right, but I think our question is, was this cartway route reasonable? Not whether there might have been some other possible way, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the question that we have before us, whether this particular cartway route was arbitrary and capricious, not whether there might have been some other route?
That you are correct, Your Honor.
So one of, let's just throw out one, I'll just throw out one of the rationale that was used. That there had been, this was a highway or two. This had been a highway previously and used by the previous owner and the current owner. And there happens to be, if I understand it correctly, some type of a power line that runs along the same road. And so the road kind of has to be open anyway. Why isn't that enough? Why is that outside the realm of a plausible, logical reason to choose this route rather than another one?
I'd go back to the brief, Your Honor, that this route substantially damages my client's use of their own property, divides it, and an alternative route when looking at what makes the most sense for both parties involved. My clients presented it, and we argued in our brief that the route picked by the township was not the most reasonable. There's division of the property, cuts off use, diminishes what, and they were. They received a damages award, but the burden on the properties would significantly, and obviously I'm speculating here, and this is not part of the argument, but speculating that in the future this is going to be a difficulty for them if they choose to reconvey the property.
Mr. Levinas,
Yes.
I am just wondering whether you're making an argument to this court that the process used by the township was unreasonable, or is your argument specifically to the ultimate route that was chosen? I don't know that there's the best question. If you need clarification, let me know.
No, Your Honor, thank you. I do understand the court's question, and the primary argument and the primary focus of my client's objection, my client's appeal to this was this access. When we go back to what a cartway is and what a cartway is not supposed to be, which is the taking of land, that my clients objected to a what had been historically a private right of way, essentially, or private, I'll say easement, even though there was no. There's no litigation or establishment of a prescriptive easement. I grant that, but that there was this access that had been extant for a significant amount of time, and rather than proceed with private litigation, they chose this cartway path. And I would argue that Romer and Kennedy and Idlewood say that that's not the proper way to go about things. And with that, and that would complete my primary argument, and I would yield the rest of my time.
All right, thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, when you are ready, you will have 15 minutes, and please be sure to identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. May it please the court, Andrew Wolf on behalf of the Town of Weeding respondents. This is a pretty simple appeal from the town's perspective, and it really requires the court simply to apply settled law. I'll just jump in right away with that very first argument that Mr. Lubinus addressed and that Judge Ross had some questions about. The appellants are essentially arguing that the Brokaws lack or didn't lack access because someone may have had an easement across their land. What is interesting there is that Mr. Lubinus acknowledged that the Brokaws owned their land since the 80s. And that the Mugleys own their land since the 90s. And even if the court wants to go beyond the administrative record, what we have here is a legal impossibility. The Brokaws could not have acquired an easement if they acquired their land 12 years before this apparent easement ever existed. what we have, I think, is three options for the court to address this issue. One of them is to look at, you know, beyond the administrative record, as Mr. Lubinus argues the court should do, but ignore sort of the other evidence that the town submitted at summary judgment showing that there is, in fact, no easement across the land. The other option would be to, and the one the township believes the court should take, is to apply binding precedent. We look at Mendota Gulf, which is cited in our brief. Mendota Gulf says the court is supposed to, you know, narrowly look at the issue based on the administrative record, not go beyond the administrative record. Mr. Lubinus mentioned that they cited some cases where pro se litigants are given, you know, some leeway. I would venture to say that there is no case where the court has ever said you do not have to raise an issue before a municipal body. If you look at all the cases where the court is talking about preserving issues for appeal before a municipal body, the court has pretty clearly said, this is a separation of powers issue. We have to make sure that we give them the opportunity to rule on this first. And if you don't raise it before them, we're not going to address it at all. The Big Lake versus St. Louis County Planning Commission case is one example of where the court said that. The second option, as I mentioned earlier, is to look beyond the administrative record, but to look at all the information. And that information shows that we do, in fact, have no easement. And the third option, obviously, would be to simply look at only the alleged easement information that Mr. Lubinus and his client submitted. And if we do that, I think it's pretty clear that appellant is sort of misinterpreting the controlling statute here, MnStat 16408. So if you look at subdivision 2, which is what the sets the mandatory conditions, when the conditions are present, there's a mandatory duty for the town to grant a court waiver. The statute says, upon a petition presented to the town board by the owner of a tract of land who has no access. The statute clearly says we're looking to the owner of the tract of land who's petitioning. It makes no difference whether someone out there has an easement across the Mugley's land. The Brokaws don't have an easement. That is, you know, not disputed. There's no evidence suggesting otherwise. We didn't brief this issue because it wasn't in Mr. Mugley's brief, but I would note that the Romer decision, and I'll provide the court with the citation here. The Romer decision involved a party who had an easement. So to say that, you know, the case law does not say a recorded easement is all that matters, what the case law does say is that the only time the court has ever said an easement is good enough to grant access is when there is a recorded easement. And this court recognized that in the Inree Hutchinson decision, which is A12-2335, 2013, Westlaw 4711202. And I'll submit a letter to the court providing that citation as well. There, this court said, you know, we recognize that any suggestion that anything other than a recorded easement is simply dicta, and no court has ever held that, you know, a claim of that we could someday claim adverse possession or an easement of necessity. No court has ever said that's sufficient. When we get onto the second, you know, main argument that appellant brings, it's simply, you know, looking at this statute again from a misinterpretation. The statute does not require the town board to look at alternative routes. It does not even require the town board to consider the public's best interest unless the town board is saying we are going to grant an alternative route. And as Judge Ross pointed out, the town board did look at an alternative route, and it did have plenty of evidence before it that this alternative route was not only beneficial, but it was the least damaging. And just to reiterate what Judge Ross pointed out, you know, this was a historic highway. It was historically used for driving. It still is a clear driving surface, and it must remain clear because there's a power line going through. These are all reasons. And the question isn't that good enough to say that, you know, we have to affirm the town board? The answer is yes, because this is a legislative decision. And, you know, review is narrow. And the Horton case, which involved the cartway, which we cited in our brief, says, you know, even if the court would have reached a different decision, it is not allowed to substitute its reasoning in the place of the township, because the township had a rational basis and had a reason for that. Mr. Lubitus mentioned that, you know, the main reason why they're arguing against this is because his client believes that he'll be damaged. And we noted that that wasn't ever raised as an issue, but that Mr. Mugley was paid damages and the town had a reasonable basis for setting those damages. They had an appraiser and they paid Mr. Mugley fair market value for those damages. So on those two bases, you know, if we look at the plain language of the statute.
Was that a one-time, it's not a rent, it was like a one-time damages amount, is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor, consistent with what the statute requires for the damages payments.
I mean, it's not an issue before us, but I haven't handled many of these cases, but I was a bit surprised about the amount of the damages, given the swath that's sort of cut through the property. But I guess that's not an issue before us at this point.
Correct, Your Honor. And frankly, I mean, I was a little surprised as well. I had to remind myself, though, that this is an easement. He's not, you know, taking, this is a cartway. He's not taking the, you know, the land. But, and again, still, as I mentioned, I'm not an appraiser. The town had a qualified appraiser and the appraiser reached this. So I'm sure he or she, the appraiser, would know better than I would what it was.
And I didn't mean to take you off field because it isn't, if you present it to us, but it was just a curiosity on my part.
Thank you. But I guess, you know, just getting back to the general outline here, the arguments are based on a misinterpretation of the statute. We have settled law, the Kennedy decision, the Horton decision, saying the town did exactly what it was supposed to do. It did exactly, it found the conditions. This is a mandatory duty. It had no choice but to grant this. If it wanted to grant the alternative route, then it would have had to look at other, but the town didn't grant the alternative route. It granted the petition for route, found the conditions were present. It had a rational basis. And for those reasons, we would ask that the court affirm the district court's decision. And if there's any other questions, I will answer them. I see I have about 6 minutes left.
I'm not seeing any questions from the court. So thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I
appreciate your argument. And counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will not be using that entire time because any rebuttal that I have is fairly narrowly tailored to this, once again, to this idea of access and you know, all things considered here, what we have is a government taking a cartway. The cartway statute has been likened to eminent domain. We have a government taking where the burden and the cost were shifted to a public entity away from the private entity. And on that basis, and additionally, most bases, we would urge the court to reconsider, if not based on the law, then based on public policy decisions. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments today and the help you provided the court, both at the argument and in your briefs. We will get a decision out issued in the statutory timeframe. Feel free to log off.
Thank you.